Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Well, and hello, welcome back. This is Morgana with my husband, Devin.
And I can't get over our theme music. I have to say, I have this thing for that sort of Spanish guitar, flamenco, passionate. It's just interesting and fun, and I love it.
Well, that's why I picked it, because I've heard you singing Cuanto Caliente El Sol on many occasions.
Just like a native, you said that.
I know. I bet you thought I was Spanish.
That was Cuanto Caliente El Sol.
Okay, thank you.
Classic song from the 50s, later done by Luis Miguel in the 80s, which is one of the most amazing and perhaps terrible videos I have ever seen. It's absolutely, it was created for a Latin audience. A lot of guys in Speedos, big, giant
hair. What's not to love?
What's not to love? Sometimes you can't tell who's the guys and who's the girls in the video.
Spoken like a true middle-aged person.
Right, oh, without question, because I don't know what's going on. The beauty is that I don't need to know.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know us, my name is Morgana Ray. I've been a life and business success coach for 26 years. My husband, Devin, has been a relationship coach and teaching Kabbalah for like how many years?
Many, many years. Matter of fact, I'm just finishing up. Geez, what turned out to be like a 6-month in-depth series on tarot, and very philosophical, very spiritually bent, really about, I don't know why I'm telling you this now, but I am, because I started speaking, about sort of like the human condition, sort of like the 78 pieces to sort of like the universal human experience. And so I think it covers a wide range, and I think it's worthy of time, perhaps more in depth than probably what most people would want. But I think
50 cards, 2 hours each, is a lot of time.
Well, this is 78 cards.
Oh, 78.
78 cards. And yeah, it was about 2 hours. So lots of material. I think it'll probably become a book.
And those of you who've been listening to our show, you've heard Devin talk about Kabbalah more than once. It's a big part of your life.
Yeah.
And totally. What you teach.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. I think this kind of goes hand in hand with the whole sort of crazy, sexy midlife love, although typically people don't immediately think crazy and sexy when they talk about Kabbalah.
Oh, baby.
Which is fine. I think there's a certain measure of developing a mindset that allows you to get in touch with the world and what's your part in that thing. And then a lot of stuff kind of gets to be let go. So you can go out and be that crazy, sexy thing, and you have a foundation that is good for living. So it works for me.
Well, this is one of those weeks where, you know, thank God for a really good, loving partner, because it's 2 years since my grandmother died. My father, who died last year, visited me in a dream last week, and I woke up in tears. I visited my 92-year-old grandfather for the first time since my birthday party in January. And, you know, he's talking to my dead grandmother every night. Devin and I we sat with Grandpa with our masks distanced, reading poetry about death, and because his life is winding down. And so it's like I'm in a really raw space where love is really my rock and my foundation. And I think that's why we love. I've been thinking, you know, it seems like after I turned 50, things really turned and people started dying. And that's just going to continue until everybody does. And I think maybe that's a shift in midlife. And I really feel that, you know, death and grief is what love feels like. It's not the only feeling, but I'm grateful to have loved people that evoke grief, because that's just kind of the quality of the person that I'm so lucky that I knew and loved people that I could miss. In other news, a year ago, Devin and I were in Lisbon this week.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because I was going to say all the conversation about death isn't, I mean, it's necessary.
Yeah.
But the crazy, sexy part of it is probably
lacking. I think it's part of the crazy. It's not very sexy. It really is not very sexy. And yet, you know, it's part of life. It's part of having bodies.
And we get to take account and stock for all the wonderful people that we admire and love and have learned from that allows us, you know, I mean, I remember losing somebody years ago, and a dear friend of mine said, we honor those we love by leading a good life. And that's one of those things that I've always kind of taken to heart, like, okay, yep, grieve and cry your face off and have feelings and do that. And then at the same time, kind of run out and make sure that part of your experience is a great one.
Yeah.
You know, go do the things you want and live that life that you want to have.
It's funny for me, the grieving is kind of a slow burn because there was so much relief seeing somebody who's trapped in a body and being released. But yeah, I think this month I'm just feeling it. And
yeah,
of course. You've been really helping me through it.
Oh, well, that is absolutely, absolutely my pleasure. And Lisbon, we have been seeing Lisbon a lot.
Well, that was our most recent wedding.
That was our most, and it's been a long time since we've had a wedding, which is okay. We'll have more, but the world is how it is right now, and Lisbon is a remarkable, remarkable country.
Oh my God! I
really, good food.
I want to try living there at some point. I have such a crush on the country.
I don't blame you, and I have no problem with that. That's you know, at some point in the future, we can do that.
Yeah. That will be fun. That's something to look forward to. So, I know I'm kind of jumping all over the place here because we have a really awesome guest today. Kat Williford was my coach 20 years ago when I was getting my first coaching certification. She was the first, I think, certified coach trainer of the first accredited coaching school in the world. So, you know, all these coaches that we see on television or hear on the radio or we know, kind of, you know, a lot of it leads back to Kat's time when this industry was being created and the standards and the ethics and the core proficiencies were being hammered out, and Kat was there. She also, this is what is so cool about her and why I wanted her on the show. I'll get to the specific how it ties in with our topic in a minute, but she was the first coach to professionally start tying in the woo-woo spiritual stuff into mainstream coaching, the first one to be bringing in goddess archetypes, the first one to be bringing in astrologer. She was the one who got all the crap that everybody thought she was crazy. People didn't approve of it. She took all the heat so that I can do it and nobody bet or fewer people bat an eye over time, because I was an early adopter. I started coaching at a time where I had to like explain what a life coach is. It's so much easier now. So
she's a trailblazer.
She is a trailblazer. And she has a new book coming out, and she has this wealth of experience. She's coached the big corporations and the entertainment companies and all that kind of stuff. And she's got this really personal book coming out, really about a woman's journey, a woman's relationship with her body, a woman taking responsibility for her dreams and her health and finding her own wisdom. And not to, you know, give any more of it away, because I can't, because it's really Kat's story to tell. Let's bring Kat on. Kat, are you there?
I'm here. Oh my gosh. Just been listening to y'all. I just love listening to y'all. Y'all are fun.
And Kat is not from Southern California, y'all, if anybody was wondering.
No, she's not originally from Texas, but, you know, I've lived here many more moons than I did in Texas, so.
Well, welcome. I hope we're going to have some crazy, sexy conversation and fun. And
let's do it.
Yeah, good to hear your voice.
Well, and I thought that what you're talking about, you know, crazy, sexy midlife love is also always grounded in self-love. Mm. And midlife, we have relationships with our bodies that are different than the dreams of our youth. And sometimes the dreams of our youth is not what ends up happening. So
you said it. That is so, yeah. Yes, that.
So what led you on this journey to share this whole message about taking back your health and your dreams and trusting your body?
You know, I think like any of us that have a wake-up call moment in a doctor's office, perspectives start to change automatically, whether we have asked them to or not, and we see things. And I had already begun to change my life because it was clear to me that I was not going to get what I wanted with the man I'd been with for 17 years and who had been, we weren't midlife, but we were crazy, sexy, fun, cool, and all those things together, but just we're not going to be able to get on the same page with what really the rest of our lives needed and wanted to look like together. So I think why this is such an important topic for me is I abdicated my own authority, my own desires and dreams because of that passion and love. And so in so doing, I was not holding myself as an equal in terms of self-love. And what that cost me time-wise, et cetera, with my fertility and with what I really wanted, which was a baby. And I, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm a, hey, don't do this out there, younger girls. But, you know, I'm like the warning here. And it's also, I think, so pertinent for so many of us in midlife to offer ourselves a heck of a lot of forgiveness for those choices we made when we were younger, when we were under the spell of something. Doesn't matter what it really is, whether it was love or a dream that we maybe chased a little past its expiration date. We've all done that. And so, but taking responsibility, like this moment in the doctor's office had me sit up and take notice of where I had abdicated my responsibility to myself in service of other people.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah. And did all of this in spite of not letting my clients get away with that.
Isn't that the worst?
And that goes to, like, sometimes we're so busy honoring certain core values, because if I looked at my life, and I have, boy, I was honoring loads of my core values over those years. Mm-hmm. Yet the one that kept slipping was the dream of children.
Yeah.
And we think we have a little more time than we do. to what you all were talking about earlier around grief, we always think we're going to have a little more time with that person than we actually wind up having. And and maybe that's why I try and live so full out. I saw my father die early, and that impacts us, I think.
So you sacrificed your fertility for a relationship, and I knew you during that relationship, and you loved the guy, and you were really happy with the guy, and then what happened?
Yeah. You know, I think over time, when we have supplanted our own desires for too long, it's like we can't stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about a very significant moment in the book that had me really wake up.
What's the name of your book?
The Ovarian Chronicles, Expectations, Heartache, Resilience.
I love that.
Yeah, good title.
Thank you. Yeah.
So back to what you were saying. Oh, and we're going to have a link because I know the book is coming out next month.
Yep.
So it's not available yet on Amazon. So we're going to have a link so that people can just opt in to get a notification of when the book goes live and how to get like extra goodies.
I've got loads of good goodies. Yeah, lots of good, fun goodies coming y'all's way.
You hear that, y'all's way. So, okay, so I interrupted you. So we were talking about what saying no to your truth cost you in terms of that relationship. Even though it was a good relationship.
Yeah. And, we went back and forth. I mean, it was just like, and nobody could, they're like, how can you all not get on the same page? His grandmother was flicking his forehead. My mom was like, what is wrong with the two of you? And so many people. Here's the case where, I don't know, since we're in midlife, we remember this song. There was a refrain in a song from the 70s, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy, there's only you and me, and we just disagree.
Uh-huh.
And that's really where it was. It wasn't about either one of us being a bad person or doing something horrible or horrendous. And of course, over time, if you're in a relationship with someone for nearly 20 years, you're going to hurt them. You're not necessarily going to intend to, but you will hurt them, and they will hurt you. So it wasn't like there was a big blaming, shaming, meltdown, histrionic moment. It was a very quiet inside of myself. And, you know, I talk a lot about masks, that we wear masks in our day-to-day life. And they're survival coping skills to get us through something.
Yeah.
Born out of trauma or necessity or, you know, just to get us through something is when we were kids or even as adults. Yet when we're no longer in that circumstance, the problem becomes we continue to wear them habituated rather being at choice. And so what I discovered was I'm a huge Pollyanna. I'm glass is almost full, even if there's like a tiny drop left. Oh, that's almost full. That's just my way of looking at life. And I think I had this belief that it would all work out. So I have what I call the fairy tale fine mask, and I was wearing it because there were some pieces of my life with my ex that were very lovely and fairy tale like. But then that kind of turned into what I call the suck it up buttercup mask. And all of a sudden I was sucking it up, living in his world, living in his world, living in his world. And I'm like, where's your world, Kat? Where's your world?
So you bring up a really good question for me. Because we know that having a positive attitude and focusing on the positive is actually really healthy.
Yes.
You know, it's good for your happiness. It's good for a relationship. And where's the line between it being healthy and then not being healthy?
I think what I discovered there, Morgana, was that the unhealthy line became when I realized my dream was in deep jeopardy of having children. And I knew if I stayed, I would become a person I never wanted to be. If I didn't at least try and go for that dream.
Yeah.
And again, I have no blame of him. I have no hate of him. We are good friends. He's so excited that this book is coming out, you know, still in relationship. And I think that to me is so important that we found a way to stay in relationship in spite of those differences, in spite of the pain, in spite of what we both wished we could have wanted together.
I remember going through a breakup and getting a haircut, and the person cutting my hair said, you know, sometimes the bird falls in love with the fish, but where do you live in that particular world? And I think that's kind of what you're describing, that he was probably a great bird and you're probably a great fish and you needed to swim.
And he needed to fly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So
can I ask what prompted the book? Or had you been writing this book since that time?
Actually, no, I had not been writing the book since that time. I was writing another book. I'm in a writer's group, and I got this, moment. The book starts with me at the gynecologist's office. You know, my feet are up in stirrups, baby blue paper sheet draped over me, and hearing words that no woman ever wants to hear from her gynecologist. And that really is the start of the book, and that it's the healing journey I took, knowing that if, and here's the other interesting part, like I'm a surgeon's daughter, so I grew up, I'm steeped in Western medicine, yet as an adult, I'm completely immersed in homeopathic, holistic, alternative healing, mind, body, spirit healing.
Mm.
So here I am in the world of my father, trying to hang on to what I know about myself, and hearing that I needed surgery to remove a growth from my ovary.
Oh.
When I really wanted to get pregnant. And I was already in another relationship, was in love. So that's really what prompted this. I was like, I can't not write about this, because I was journaling like mad, trying to understand myself. But really it was, even though Steve and I had our parting the way we had it, it was that the body holds things. And so I realized that my body was hanging on to a lingering grief.
Oh, wow.
Lingering anger, lingering sadness. And so the book is really my exploration of healing mind, body, heart, spirit. And, Morgana, you were talking about at the beginning of the show, you know, a dream that you had with your father. And I share in the book a moment where literally my father came to me, my passed away father. He died when I was 25. He literally came to me when I was in child's pose at the end of a yoga session and was in the room with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we open ourselves up to the magic of healing mind, body, heart, spirit, who knows what will happen? And that's what I wanted to share. So I share laying on of hands, healing ceremonies, what I went through, what I grappled with, and there's so much in here about what we women do to ourselves around our precious, gorgeous, amazing bodies, especially when we're younger. We torture it. We abuse it. We yell at it. We're at war with it. And God knows I was for many years. And I want that to stop. I want us to be in relationship with our body. Just like you bring people into relationship with money, Morgana, mm-hmm. I want to bring all of us into relationship with our body. There is so much wisdom in our body when we listen and learn to speak its language.
Could you talk more about that, body wisdom?
Absolutely. I'd love to. You know, I think our minds get very busy to deny what our body is subtly trying to tell us. Whether it's, oh, you know, wow, all of a sudden I just kind of have a little twinge when I run these days. But we keep right on running. We don't stop and say, hey, why is my knee twinging every time I run now? So I'm a big believer in getting in conversation with different parts of our body, getting in conversation with the whole of our body. And, you know, I of course, have a goddess who is in charge of my body, and her name is Olympia. So I talk with Olympia all the time. I just said, like, well, I need a goddess for my body. Who are you? You know, and this entity called Olympia appeared before me. And so I think it's so important that we develop that relationship to know what our body wants and needs. At this point, I'm so fine-tuned with it. It's like, if my body does not want what is down a grocery store aisle, I literally can't turn the cart down to go get all the salty, crunchy salvation into my cart. Somebody's like, no, we're going for the vegetables this time, kitty. You
know? So is it okay to ask about how you interact with Olympia? In other words, is it like a ceremony that you've created, or is it a prayer? Is it a meditation? Is it too much to ask?
No, not at all. It's not too much to ask at all. I love bringing people this. I do this with my clients all the time. You know, it's what support are we needing? And I clearly, at that point, hearing a diagnosis, was like, okay, I need to get here. The support is going to be here in my body, this structure. And so I believe we got to start with where is it showing up? Where is the thing showing up? So I just started a dialogue literally with my right ovary and the growth that was on it. And from there, what came to me was that, oh, there's actually a part of me that's really wise about my body. So even though I interact with this entity called Olympia as a separate function, she's me. She's just in charge of my body. And so I now envision her. You know, so I'm a big believer in envisioning what's around us, who we're, even like the future part of us that we want to be, like, let's envision that. So I envisioned her, and she just, I mean, she's Amazonian, she's this, that, and the other thing, but she's so loving and so quiet. And this is the one thing I've learned in all this work, that the more we lean into that relationship with our body, with our this vehicle that we are in, the more wisdom it has for us, the more it can share with us. So I do. I used to have a very elaborate thing to reach her, and now it's just like, okay, Olympia, I just kind of need some check-in here. What are we doing? And I just kind of feel her. Sometimes she talks to me and says, nope, this is what you need to do. Other times she just kind of guides me physically in a direction.
And do you do this with your clients too?
I do, yeah. I think it's so important that we've got whatever ally they need, you know, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whatever it is. I think we can develop out any of our allies. I was working with a client the other day, and we're working on developing out her emotional stamina.
Mm. Ooh, that sounds really useful right now.
Doesn't it? I know.
Can you work your magic with men too?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I know a man who has had plantar fasciitis for maybe 2 years.
Oh, yeah, that's a drag for that man.
His name is Devin. Do you think you could work with him really quickly on air?
Absolutely.
Well, that may be asking.
Can you do a demo?
I can, but, you know, I always got to find out, like, Devin, is this something you actually want to talk about right now?
You know, my wife does, so I suppose that means I'm at least game.
And I'm doing my big eyes.
Yeah, she's making her doe eyes at me, which could only mean that you know, I'm helpless to her feminine wiles.
Oh, God,
I hope you're laughing instead of crying. Sometimes I have to double check.
I am laughing. It is true. Oh, I'm laughing.
Good. Oh,
yes,
good. I'm
I
just
laughing.
Teasing. So I'm happy to go through like a demo with you, but I also want to kind of get your story out. Do you know what I mean? So I don't want to kind of sidetrack you.
Well, how about this? Why don't I kind of demo how to start that conversation, and then I'll let you take it further wherever you want to take it.
All
on
right.
your own. That way people, like, because I'm happy to demo like how people can start to get in and support themselves this way.
Perfect.
So Devin, which foot is this?
It is my right foot.
Your right foot.
Yes.
And so when you think about your right foot, what are like the first three things that come up right now?
Stretching and being careful and a little bit of pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if you're in a position where you can actually look at your foot, see your foot, touch your foot. Doesn't really matter. I'm just throwing it out there. If you can, great.
I mean, the foot is attached to my leg, so I can
yes.
see. Yeah, I mean, I guess I can touch it.
Yeah.
Does wearing a shoe help?
Well, wearing a shoe probably helps for the condition you have.
Yeah, no, it totally does.
Yeah, so feel free to keep your shoe on. Yeah, no, that's cool. Just to make a connection there, really, so the shoe can stay on. Yeah.
Yes.
And you don't have to touch it. Just looking at it is a good connection as well.
All right.
Yeah. And so what do you want to appreciate this right foot for in this moment?
That it does it does everything else really well.
Mm.
So I can, you know, I can walk, stand, you know, put weight on it. You know, I'm incredibly blessed.
Dance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lots of dancing as well. Although I have to be mindful of the dancing part.
Mm-hmm. And if your right foot wanted you to be mindful of something in particular, what might that be?
To treat it well.
And what would that look like?
You know, probably doing what I have frequently been doing, which is stretching it, you know, wearing the middle age orthotics, avoiding my favorite thing in the world, which is flip-flops. So I don't wear those anymore because I would wear those for, you know, basically from April to November as my yeah. daily footwear. And of course, a doctor has said, yeah, that's not a great plan. And then, of course, all the dancing and not stretching. And I should probably wear, they give you a boot. And I should probably do that too more often.
And so these things that you're identifying, like wearing the boot a little more often, not wearing the flip-flops, this, that, and the other thing, what does that give your right foot?
Probably a chance to get back to normal.
Mm. And if you had a wish, any wish for your right foot, what would that wish be?
To feel healthy and strong again. Mm. But like I said, I'm a big believer that I already have tons of blessings with it.
Mm-hmm. So this is about making it like just even more, mwah, even better.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and piping in here, The foot pain has really interfered with one of Devin's greatest joys in life, which is travel.
Oh, yeah, that has been, that's true. But we haven't been traveling, so it hasn't been affecting it.
But last year, we were in Spain and Lisbon and France and Belgium, the most wonderful places in the world. And it was a really, really hard trip because Devin was in constant pain.
Yeah, that's true, because we were walking very, very long. You know, we were probably walking.
We were walking
6 to 10 miles
a day.
Yeah, we were walking like 6 to 10 miles a day, certainly.
Well, and that puts a different spin on things, right? And certainly with the current climate conditions we're all living under right now, travel is not as available to us all. So there's some, it's interesting that you kind of even forgot about that pain.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And that is something that's very interesting about pain. When we're not experiencing it, we can't physically feel it. So it's like we can, the mind can really conjure up mental and emotional pain, and we can go there like in a nanosecond. But the body, like once it's through it, it doesn't actually physiologically feel it again. Now we can like psych it in there, but physiologically it's not there. And so because you're not traveling, it like went out of your mind. So what I would want to know and where I would want to point you, Devin, is to really look at, you know, actually one of the free gifts that I've got with my book is this whole decoding the messages in your body and looking at the differences between the left and right side of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So when something is showing up just on one side of our body, it's generally related to which side. So the right side is that masculine energy part of us, the doing part, the left side of our body more the receiver. So sometimes if the left side is injured, we're not taking care of our body enough. We're not, or we may be doing too much and our left side of our body is going, hey, slow down. So it's all in that conversation that you start to have. And the right side, you know, the right side of your body may say, hey, slow down a little bit. Let's do some more gentle things here.
Does it flip when a person is left-handed?
Not in my experience.
Okay.
Yeah, not in my experience because I'm actually ambidextrous.
Yeah, I am too. My father bought me the wrong mitt when I was a kid.
Yeah. So, Devin, what I would encourage is, like, you know, really continue this conversation almost daily about, you know, what does your foot want from you right now? What do you want for it? And as you continue this conversation, just continue checking, feeling the energy, like, and invite the energy of, like, the wisdom of your body to speak to you. Is there, you know, a wise anchor ally of your body?
I can do that.
That will develop.
Yes, you can.
I can totally do that.
I know that about you. Yeah.
My wife will have to remind me often.
I would say, and you're in good hands.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I believe that.
I'll
but I just thought I wanted to share that.
When you're driving or when you're about to fall asleep, but at the useful times.
Usually, right when my eyes are closed.
Yeah.
Is usually what my wife will remind me.
Yes. Well, the thing is, we want it, like, if you can touch it or look at that part of your body, just make a connection to it. Because what I found is, like, where things wind up, like my grief, my sadness, my anger wound up there on my ovary, there was something there for me to look at, like, especially since I was so wanting to become pregnant. And really, what did I need to release and let go of? And by the way, I'm not one of those who thinks we bring these things on ourselves. I just believe that certain, like, everything is energy, so it's going to show up somewhere.
That makes sense. By the way, I also really appreciate that you don't bring in blame, because that's just a very kind of odd, unhelpful trend in our circles, our community of blaming pain and challenge on the person going through it. I like, you know, when you talk about masks and you talk about how these masks are created, I hear such appreciation for the great service the mask has done. And now you're kind of bringing your Marie Kondo perspective. Like, does this mask continue to spark joy, or have I outgrown it?
And you know what? I'm going to keep a couple of mine close by. I might need them again.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my chief operating officer of control. Man, can she get stuff done. Every once in a while, I got to pull her out. But I know where she was born, and I know where she got really solidified. And she got really solidified when I was 17 and in a horrific car accident with a train. Mm. And I was not the driver. So then I made that, she made up, I must always have my hands on the wheel, or life is scary and dangerous.
Mm. So if anybody's listening right now and you have a question for Kat about masks or about body wisdom, our phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, it's 888-627-6008. And Kat, we're going to continue to have a conversation, and our producer will let us know if there's a caller.
So I actually wanted to back up just a little bit. Kat was talking about, your book and a writer's group. And I wanted to kind of throw out the notion, I'm in a writer's group as well. And obviously you're talking about sort of like deeply core personal issues about being and who it is that, sort of like your vision of who you are. How was that to kind of be, and I'm assuming you brought that information into your group, which makes it very personal. Yes?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the people in my writer's group, we've been together for a long time. And, but you know, honestly, I share deep stuff anyway with it. You know, with all the ceremonies and circles I've provided and done through the years, I think there's such power in being vulnerable. And that's just such a key for me. I mean, one of the things I love to tell people is, you know what, vulnerability is your greatest strength. We think it's a weakness, but it is our greatest strength.
As someone who was in your circles back, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. before you left LA, that was one of the things I loved your monthly moon rituals. And one of the things that I really appreciated and respected, and one of the things that made me love and trust you, was even as the high priestess, you were so open about your own challenges and vulnerabilities, which gives permission for everybody else. And I think it is so much stronger and more courageous to be transparent like that. It's, you didn't make it all about you, but you included your full self instead of protecting yourself from us. And that really has deeply influenced me, and I think why I love coaching the way I do is because you demonstrated that, which is that your authenticity is very much aligned in my values.
Oh, thank you for that, Morgana. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
So you described... Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to complete one thought there to Devin's question. You know, it's not easy to lay it on the line in no matter like how safe the group is, there's still that gulp factor. But I do know that when I was going through what I was going through and really trying to heal mind, body, heart, spirit in every which way, the more truthful I got with myself about the impact of the choices I had made, the freer I became. And so I think there's something here that's so important and key that I don't care if you tell anybody else what's happening for you, tell yourself. Tell yourself what is happening for you emotionally, mentally, spiritually, in every which way. Because only when we tell ourselves the truth can we actually change anything.
I think that's an incredibly important point. And just to kind of go back to that, I remember there was a point, because I've written memoir as well, and I remember a few years back where my publisher called me up sort of like on a random Tuesday and said, okay, we're done. And the train is leaving the station. Your words, your candid words, may be read by people you know, people you don't know, and some of those people may have very strong reactions, both positive and negative.
Yep.
Are you, the train is leaving the station. Are you ready? And I think he was basically giving me an out if I wanted to. Oh, well, I said this ridiculous thing and now I can take it back. And there was just sort of like, I think I thought about it for about 6 seconds. And at that stage of the game, it was like, you know, listen, this is the truth. This is my truth. And I'm running with it. I'm assuming you're on the same, your train is has left the station, right? Because your book is coming out soon.
Yeah. The train is left the station. And, yeah, believe me, on that last, you know, proofing edit we were all doing, there were times when I went, you can't put this in the book, Kat. And then there were other times when I was like, you have to put this in the book. If you take it out, you're not telling the truth.
Mm.
And if you're going to write a book like this, you got to tell the truth or people will know, people will feel it. And I'll be very honest, you know, the first couple of versions of this book, I had taken as much of me out of it as possible. Like, you know, kind of like old school coach disappears. my editor said, this doesn't work. Without you, this doesn't work. I need your full story here. I know it's painful, but we have to know the full story with you and your man here and why this, you know, you can't just pick up here in the doctor's office. That's fine, but you have to tell these other beats of the story. And so I did, and there were parts in there where I was like, oh, man. And I called those people that I was concerned about what they were going to read. And I said, hey, you're in my book.
Congratulations.
And do you want to read what that section is? And across the board, they said, no, I trust you.
Oh. You know, that's funny. I only said that to my mother. I said, listen, I wrote this book. Mm-hmm. Nobody looks good. And you're in it. And I told her, I said, you can't read it. Because I knew if she would have feelings and opinions about what it was that I wrote or whatever.
Of course.
And she, it's, to her credit, she ended up saying, well, is it funny? And I said, yeah. I said, it has its moments. And she goes, well, if it's not funny, then I may, you know, not be happy. So I, you know, we all have our own criteria. And I suppose I'm asking because I truly believe that memoir done well has to talk about secrets. It has to really be, you know, it has to be an open book. Because if it's not, the sort of universal things that we go through, the things that we don't want to talk about in sort of like polite company, for lack of a better expression, then it just becomes this routine thing. We're just talking about the dilemma, which isn't the thing. The thing is the experience, the humanness.
The humanness and the cost to, I mean, I got very, part of my healing was in writing this book.
Right.
The more I wrote, the more I healed. And I think it was maybe last summer when we did it intense, like, all right, is everything where it needs to be? Is this where the, yes, okay, yes, good. I mean, it took me down. I will be honest, for like a week, I was just so sad. I would then get really mad, the emotional roller coaster. But I know that was part more of the grieving, more of the healing of so many elements and parts of my journey. And you know, I do have, you know, I've got this amazing optimism, positivity inside of me, and I'm grateful for it every day. And, but going through this healing journey let me understand, and this is why I have resilience in the subtitle, how resilient I actually am. Mm-hmm. Because I used to run around in my 20s thinking, oh my God, I can't handle it, I can't handle it, I can't handle it. Oh my God, what I had already handled by that time was staggering. So there's healing when we tell our story. And so I want to invite anybody here to, even if you don't have any intention of writing a memoir and putting it all out there, write for yourself. Tell yourself your story. It's one of the most healing things I think we can ever do. And I think that's why coaching is so powerful. We're actually inviting our clients to tell their story and be witnessed in it and be loved in spite of whatever they've made up about themselves because of their story.
You've described this book as a cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. What are you cautioning women about?
I'm cautioning women to, girl, if you're not going to take responsibility for your dream, nobody else will.
Mm.
And it, we have to be our own dream tenders and keepers. And I'm also cautioning women when they hit whatever age it is that, you know, they're like, wow, I really want kids. Listen, listen to that. Listen to your body's tickle and urge. And it is a cautionary tale to be in relationship with your body. So, you know, I mean, I have pushed my body to its edge so many times and I didn't have to.
And how does that apply to the second half of life?
Yeah, man, I am having so much fun these days. Because I think what happens at a certain point, when we do our healing and grieving and forgiving ourselves for whatever we're holding ourselves on the hook for, and that's another main theme in my book, is forgiveness of self, forgiveness of other, but especially forgiveness of self. Once we get there, it's so much more enjoyable to be in life because we're not, you know, it's like we've got some, if we're really hammering ourselves about things, it's like we're walking around with a guillotine swinging wildly over our heads. Oh, I better not do this because the guillotine is going to chop my head off. And here in midlife, it's like that just goes away. You know, I laugh when I turned 40, I was like, woo, I love this. And then when I turned 50, I'm like, oh my God, do I really love this?
Yeah, I know. We're almost out of time. So yeah. The name of your book and when it's coming out and what are the gifts?
So, The Ovarian Chronicles, Expectations, Heartache, Resilience. We're coming out in November. Mm-hmm. And one of the groovy things I've put together is I want to do some community, I'm calling them jam sessions. We're going to get together on Zoom and we're going to just meet each other. I want it to be like a party, part ceremony, part party, part, hey, here's how you can really, really grab a hold of this book and use it for and leverage it. So you, it's not just a story, it's something that you can carry forward with. Because I give loads of it, just things that I was doing that people can pick up on and do for themselves. And I've also got like a Decode Your Body's Messages for Love, Health, and Happiness. It's an ebook and guided visualization that you can go over again and again and again for any ache, pain, hot flash, you know, allergic reaction, whatever it is going on, to develop that wisdom relationship with your body. And then I can't help myself. I have to throw in more. I've got a deck of affirmation focus cards. It's a little mini deck to choose every day. I'm throwing in also my magic garden meditation because it's so powerful to release those things which no longer serve us. And that's really... Fantastic. For me, what this is all about, release what doesn't work and embrace what does.
So we're going to have this posted in the show notes, but for people who are listening live right now, the link will be catwilliford.com/ovarian-chronicles-book. kind of a mouthful. So catwilliford.com/ovarian-chronicles-book. And there will be a link in the show notes, which should, the replay should go live probably tomorrow sometime.
So that's just to be clear, that's Cat, C-A-T.
As in a kitty cat.
And the last name, no space, williford.com. Does that sound about right, Cat?
That's it, right there.
Fantastic. Any final words? Oh, of course.
Well, I don't think they've given us our heads up. So
the
I think
hook.
We just
we
keep
don't
talking.
Have the hook, so we can keep talking.
Yeah, maybe there's another question we can throw in.
you talk about hope not being a great long-term strategy. I love that. You want to talk about that?
Sure. And I think that's part of the fairy tale fine mask, the suck it up buttercup mask, the pleaser mask. I found myself hoping that one day it would be my turn, right, in that relationship, and I would have what I wanted. And so I developed hope when my father was dying. It was a very arduous 6-month siege in ICU. And you have to develop hope to get through that kind of stuff in life.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful that I was able to do that, because only hope could let you go back in every single day and put one foot in front of the other without losing your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, something developed, a skill developed for a reason, but it's not a great strategy long term. Hope has to have some, hey, let's put some anchors here. What do we really want? You know, it can't just be hope tends to have us just keep pushing something out.
What action are you going to take today?
That's right. What choice do you have to make today? What decision do you need to make? What authority do you need to take today in order to move this forward, so it isn't just this hopeful thing that's out there that someday will happen? Because it feels
you sound like a coach.
I sound like a coach, don't it? Feels like that, like, because then the fruit is just always a little bit out of reach.
Yeah.
I want it in my hand. I want to eat it. I want to be juicy. I want to be sticky with it. You know? So, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, we're in our last minute. Thank you so much, Kat. The book is The Ovarian Chronicles. It will be available in November. And you definitely want to opt into Kat's link so that you get all the extra goodies. And Devin and I will be back next week, Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, for some more crazy, sexy midlife love, diving back into having loving, intimate conversations when you want to kill each other, right?
Is that what it is? Is that what takes place between us? No, in general, it doesn't. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's always about the conversation. So we'll dive more into that. And what else do we need to know?
And you can check out our weddings at crazysexymidlifelove.com and join the family. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com. We'll be right back.